Welcome to the Business of Property podcast. I'm Simon.
And I'm Stuart.
We've been finding, buying and growing income from property for over 20 years. And we talk every week about the reality of running property businesses. We would really appreciate it if you could take a few moments to leave us a rating or review in your podcast player of choice. We really do appreciate them and they really do help other people discover the Business of Property podcast. Now, unfortunately, I need to start this episode with a little bit of sad news, well, sad for me at least, and you as a listener probably too. I think perhaps exciting for Stuart, but Stuart has unfortunately decided to take a break from recording the Business of Property podcast, and he is going to be focusing on other things that are going to be taking up his time and his effort and his energy for a little while. Hopefully, we will be able to tempt him back to give us some more updates on his property business in the future. And I'm very much looking forward to recording those episodes when we can. But for today, we thought we would have a look through some of Stuart's key property learnings in his business so far. And I think we may as well just kick off with the first one, Stuart.
Yeah, and I should say, you know, in the 4.5 years almost that we've done this podcast, it's in terms of my property business's lifespan, it's nearly the same. So we've been doing this podcast as almost as long as I've been running a property business, not quite, but you know, over half that time I've been doing this podcast. So I very much enjoyed being part of this podcast, enjoyed our conversations, and honestly, I've learned a lot from the podcast, yourself, and from listeners and now viewers that have commented on the show. So it's been a very enjoyable thing to do, but as you said, other things to focus on and just need to allocate time appropriately. But hopefully, as you say, we will be back. This should always be considered not the end, and hopefully we'll be back. But we talked about five things. So in the 4.5 years that we've done this podcast, there's probably five things really that whenever I think about property, building a property business, that come to mind. And the first one for me is always, it costs more and takes longer than you ever think. And I mean that from both just doing one single property development and also building a property business. I mean, I'm not sure how much detail we need to get into on that, because I think people can comprehend that. But all to say is, from my experience, I've never run a project that has come in under budget. And I've never run a project where I had a call from the builder or the plumber or whoever was project managing and said, "Stuart, you won't believe this. We've actually finished 3 weeks early." I know of a project recently with my building team that took more than 6 months longer than was expected. So it took half a year longer than the original project. So my first lesson to impart on anyone that's sort of just around is that whenever you're planning, so if you're planning to build a business and you're planning and you think you're going to be done in 5 years, maybe add some contingency to that. And the only anecdote I'll sort of also bring out is that when I first started my business, so back in November 2016, my first intention was to have 100 rooms within 12 months. And I've repeated that because I'm still embarrassed to say it. I'm genuinely embarrassed to say it. But however, it was my learning. We're still not at 100 rooms, almost 7.5 years on. We're nearly there. But what I learned was actually everything just takes so much longer. So maybe just think about, if you're building a plan, just how long does it take me to do one of these things, and get some learnings before you start building extreme, because we all want to be, well, a lot of us want to be, super ambitious. And that was my big learning, is maybe temper the optimism with some reality.
Yeah, indeed. I think this can be applied to almost anything in life, probably, actually, never mind business. I mean, look at how long it's taking Elon Musk to produce the new Tesla models he's talking about, or to get his rockets capable of going to Mars, or develop self-driving capabilities. All of these were predicted years and years before they actually happened. In fact, they have happened yet. Most of those haven't. So I think it's very, very true. And in the property world, just looking at my recent example, my purchase took longer than expected to complete. It then took longer than I wanted to find builders and get them started. It then took longer for the builders to actually complete their process. And of course, along this way, it all cost more as well. It cost more to have an empty house sitting there. It cost more to have the builders doing their things for a bit longer than they were expecting. So yes, it does. Everything does, I think, cost more than we expect and take longer with that. And you always have to build in contingency. So when I sort of created a rule of thumb, when I used to project manage computer systems, software development projects, and I would go through with either myself or with team that I was working with, and we'd estimate how long we thought everything would take. We'd break it down into sort of reasonable chunks, not tiny details, but sort of a few day tasks or whatever. And then at the end, we would add in 20% contingency for sort of bug fixing and fixing stuff out as we go along. And then on top of that, we would add another 20% contingency for the overall sort of project contingency. And as you say, I think it was rare that a project didn't overrun. And this is overrun on the double contingency'd level. So do you have a sort of rule of thumb on how much contingency you feel would be sensible to put on your own personal sort of estimates for things that you've developed over time?
Well, I think this is where my suggestion is that people should need to run some things first to get a feel, because it's very easy to read a book in terms of, you know, home building project management, and they say, well, typically to rewire a property will take X number of weeks to plumb a property, but every property is different. You know, we've got 5-bed houses where we introduced en suites, and so we're putting, you know, waste pipes in on 3 different floors, and that itself is not straightforward, and so that can extend a project. So while, you know, there is no set time, I mean, I think for me, like 20% always just feels safe. So if someone says it's, you know, something's going to take 6 weeks, I think, well, okay, I'm going to add a fifth to that. So let's add an extra, you know, and I'll round up to 2 weeks. So I'll make it 2 months. And again, there's so many variables. I've got a builder whom I love and who's been brilliant for me, but he's extremely optimistic, which is what I love about him, because he's a very optimistic, but he's not like, oh, this is going to be really tough, or that's going to be really tough. He said, oh, yes, Stuart, we'll knock that out in 3 days. You know, and I'll be in thinking, well, in my head, this is a 6-week project. So I think everyone has to take things on face value. And if you don't have experience, maybe speak to those that have. Getting the disciplines in, you know, so we've run a few projects where we have builder, plumber, electrician, and you might have another, could be a roofer, could be damp works, could be, foundation. So it's too variable to give anything. But, you know, as you say, I think if you build a project plan based on the things that we've just talked about and you say, well, this project plan's coming out at 8 weeks, I'd be thinking there's at least a couple more weeks there. So that's just contingency. I think that's just a standard contingency.
You've always got to add a bit of contingency. And as you say, you kind of need to know how optimistic your estimator is as well. So I think my sort of double 20% is always related to me being a bit optimistic in timeframes as well. So as you say, if you know you're dealing with an optimistic builder, maybe increase that contingency a little bit more. Yeah. So let's move on to point number two, Stuart.
So I've put point number two as cost of debt. And this is something which has significantly affected my business. So we've built very good business. I shared it on the podcast recently. You know, we've built a revenues of around 35K a month, which in itself I'm very proud of and it's fantastic. But we still have, you know, we're only this year really are we going to post our first official profit. Next year should look even better. But one of the biggest, so obviously we have huge costs in there. We have mortgage costs and we have cost of renting from landlords and rates. So they would be the biggest costs in terms of the business. However, the cost of debt has also made a significant impact. And that is, so like many people, you know, referring to point one, I found out that property was going to cost a lot more than I thought it was. And to build out my plan, I couldn't just take my initial 150K and keep refinancing that like the gurus told me I could, because that money just drains away. Banks don't refinance to the levels you think they're going to refinance to. And again, that's, you know, about mitigating in terms of cost. The fees were more, and, you know, the stamp duty, you know, everything starts eking away. And so then I realized, you know, for me, because I wanted to grow a business and I wanted to grow it quickly, too quickly, it turns out, that I went to private investors and I got investor finance. And, you know, so we're talking multiple six-figure sums over the years. And we were, at some points, we were paying double-digit interest returns, so 10% plus. We're not paying those rates anymore. I'll just be clear on that. We're paying single-digit rates of return because the world changed a little bit. And we renegotiated, which is great. I'm working with good investors, so we were able to do that. But so we've been paying interest. So we've got capital loans. We've been paying interest on those loans for 7 years now. And also, when COVID hit, again, the gurus would have told you, get the bounce back loans, get your C-bills, your coronavirus business improvement loan or whatever it was really called. And you'll never have to pay it back. And of course, you know, this is all nonsense, because the only way you could not pay a loan back is by folding your business down and going to an involuntary liquidation, a voluntary liquidation. Yeah. Sorry,
that's definitely not the aim of most businesses.
No. But it was a strategy that some were sort of getting people to do. Just take your 50 grand C bills, go and buy some properties and, you know, close down your limited company. But most of us, I'm pretty sure, do not want that as an approach. And most of us have some sort of level of integrity and also want to build a business. And that's what I did. So I did take those loans out because they did really help the business. But again, they've cost money. And what's happened is now that, you know, that interest, and it's very good interest rates, but so we're paying capital and interest on mortgages, on private investor loans and bank loans. And I would say conservatively, you know, we are paying, you know, thousands, you know, it's definitely a good four figures that we are paying in interest and some repayment, some capital repayment. In fact, mostly interest and capital repayment now, I would say. We're actually in a good place. But at some stages it was just interest only, but now capital repayment. So I would really just advise anybody, you know, if you're going to take some finance from a private investor, which lots of people and businesses need to do, is factor that into your future cash flows. And that's something we've talked about on this podcast before. You know, I have a cash flow document, which actually still takes me to, I think it takes me to 25, 26, so April 26. So if I have a cost in the business today, I will put that into this spreadsheet and I'll see what that does to my cash flow all the way up to April 2026. And I think I do have one that goes on from there. And, you know, that sounds sort of meticulous and I'm not really that guy, but I realized that I had to be if the business was going to survive, because I needed to know what was going to happen in the peaks and troughs of the business, so that I could, if we were going to go into the red, I knew that in advance so I could make plans for that. And, you know, number two, if we had a really good month where the profit was good, I didn't just go out and spend it on something else because something was coming down the pipe in 6 months or 12 months time. So that cost of debt is definitely something you really factor in alongside your mortgages, your utilities, everything else, because it will have a significant impact on the profits that you make in the business.
Yeah, I know this point is really around being aware and factoring in that future impact on business, as you just said. But I'm curious, in your particular business, do you think you should have taken a different approach to debt earlier on, or did you make the right calls with taking on this debt, but you just should have been more aware of the impacts?
Yeah, I think it would have been the same call done in a different way. So I think it was really, and this really does start leading us into some of the other points, which is around clarity on vision objective, because at that time it was really just how quickly can I get the rooms? How quickly can I get the properties I need to get to a certain income threshold but I wasn't really thinking. Of course, I was aware of the interest, and I'd modelled. You know, I said, okay, so if I'm going to borrow, let's just say 100,000, I'm paying 10%. That's 110. So I know, okay, right, that's what. That I'm paying £10,000 a year for the privilege to have this 100 grand. So I need to get this 100 grand quickly turned around, so that it is paying off that interest, and I'm going to reduce that capital. I would have done it differently. That I would have planned a lot more the property projects with that in mind, and actually built a more of a 3 to 5 year time horizon to look what to actually model out what the borrowing would have done. Or what that has now done to the business, and just thought about that a bit more, and actually thought about the profitability of each property that I brought into the business, how quickly that would start repaying, which I didn't do. It was kind of just based on I'm going to buy a property. It's going to bring in gross, you know, £65,000 a year. So we'll be all right because that's a good number. You know, that's kind of where I was. And actually, if we make, let's say, you know, 25K off that, I'm like, oh, okay, that's fairly happy. Oh, and I'm going to refinance. And this comes back to point number one. Some of the refinance calculations that I'd done to repay some of the capital didn't come off because, so the big property that I often talk about, the 13-bed student property, we actually got that revalued exactly where we wanted it to. And if the bank had, given us a mortgage, the loan to value we were expecting, we would have paid off most of the capital, in fact. But because the property was revalued so high, and that was what I was expecting, well, I didn't think they were going to do it, but the valuation came in exactly where I wanted it. The bank put a ceiling on the amount they would lend. So rather than giving us 70% loan to value, which is what we were told, they said, no, we're going to limit it to 60 just because we don't want to give, basically, we didn't want to give you that much money because you've done this really well. And so that meant I had to leave a lot more with private investor. And obviously that cost of money was a lot higher than the bank cost of money. So differently, I would just use the points we've talked about and just say, okay, right, if they didn't give me this money and it was a 60% loan to value, how would this change and what would need to be different? You know, because I did a couple of projects at the same time or almost concurrently that I probably would have just slowed down a little bit just to get, you know, the ducks in a row, as we say.
Yeah, quite. So perhaps it's more about, rather than just looking at sort of a headline return on investment figure type thing, you actually need to, as you say, plan it out. Because yes, it might be that once it's up and running, you get this return, but you've got that, I don't know, few months while you're working on it where there is no income. Therefore, you need to make sure you've got other income or other funds or whatever to cover that and make sure these things don't, the expensive bits of the projects don't align. So yeah, it's about timing. So yeah. you mentioned a little bit there of the next one. So what is next on your list?
Well, it's clarity of objective. And I think we all suffer from this, and we've talked about it a few times on the podcast. And most of us have an objective to create a financial figure. And that's fine. And I think some of us, you know, are embarrassed about that. And, you know, and I think I was at the start. But actually, really, all I wanted to do was, you know, replace my previous senior management salary of, you know, six-figure salary. But I hadn't used that to create a very clear picture of how I was going to get there with property. And so the objective needed to be broken down. And we have talked about this before, so I'm not going to get into too much deep. But it's actually, okay, I want the six-figure sum, but actually, what do I need? And what is the objective? Like, what do I want to do? Because in property, it's very easy just to say, yeah, I want 100 grand a year. But there is 101 different ways we can get there, as we know. You know, we can do that through property sourcing. We can do it through service accommodation. We can do it through commercial to residential, ad nauseum. And I think very early on, people need to say, okay, what is your objective? And just be really clear. Okay, it's 100 grand a year, but you know, does that break down for monthly? Is that net? Is that your net? And again, I've had these conversations with quite a few people. They go, yeah, I want 5,000 a month. And I go, okay, is that gross or net? And they say, what do you mean? And I said, well, is that your rental revenue or is that what you're expecting at the end? And most people, oh, that's what, because the two things are very, very different, as we know, because depending, and again, I was speaking to someone and they said, yeah, I want 5,000. And I said, is that gross or net? And they said, oh, I hadn't really thought about that, but I suppose it's net. And I said, okay, so what was your plan? My plan was to buy 5 properties. And I said, well, does that still work with net? Oh, no, it doesn't. I need to buy 10. So the clarity on objective is really clear. And I sort of say that it doesn't have to be a grand vision of changing the world or building a hotel on Mars. But it's just a case of, I really want to get to this number and I would like to do it, if you know at this stage, via an HMO strategy or via a buy-to-let strategy or via a strategy that really appeals to me, because those things make a difference in the early months and years.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not sure I can really add much more to that particular point, other than to agree with you that it is important to know where you're going and be clear about where it is you're going, rather than having a sort of vague, fuzzy notion of where you want to get to, because it is much easier to sort of think about the next things, actually, I think you might be mentioning, when you do have that clarity. So with that in mind, what is next on your list?
Well, and what follows that very quickly behind is a single-minded focus, or I might say a bloody-minded focus on it. And again, this is born out of experience, and I'm pretty sure people will still go into this. So as I shared on this podcast and I've shared with other people, there was one time in my early property investment. In fact, it was around the time I was creating the Lord Panda Property Limited company, which is my property business. I'd bought a property. I'd sold my residential house and I'd bought a property that had a quarter of an acre of land on it. I was going to extend that property, basically build a property next to it to double the size of it to make it a family house. I was actually in the throes of getting planning permission. I was looking at a buy-to-let flip. I was looking at an HMO, and I was looking at stroke buying an HMO property and looking at something else. I was working on about 4 actually different strands of property approach. And that didn't help me, you know, because I didn't have the clarity on objective that we've just talked about of, okay, actually, I've got this financial goal. I think I can get there quickest using HMO because that's a high cash flow strategy. And therefore, actually, my model needs to be based on rooms. It's not about properties. It's actually the number of rooms, because I could get one property with 13 rooms, which is what I did. And that's what happened when I had a clarity, as opposed to I just need a property and I'd bought a property with 5 beds, then a property with 5 beds. But when I said, actually, my approach needs to be rooms, I could go, right, okay, so I could actually buy a property with 100 rooms. That is, if I had the financial capabilities, I could just solve that problem. If I, you know, so then it just really informed what I wanted to do, and that's led me to finance. So that single-minded focus, and this is really to anyone in properties, is, I think, we talk about shiny penny syndrome a lot, and when we talk about shiny penny syndrome, I immediately think what we're saying is lack of focus. Because if I'm really, really focused on where I'm going, what I'm doing, I'm not looking around on the floor for pennies. I'm focused on getting the pounds from wherever it is I'm heading to. Just to really get into that analogy, but it really works. And you know, you and I, you know, talked about this before the record button, which is that it's very easy because, you know, and people do when you're in property and you do podcasts and you're out in networking events, people go, oh, look, I've got this great deal here, doesn't it? And you look at it, go, oh, it does look amazing. The return on capital employed, it's an amazing yield. Oh, I'm really interested. And all of a sudden, I'm now distracted from the things that I should have been thinking about, you know, in terms of the project management or focus on getting the next property into my pipeline. Whereas if I'm truly focused and I have this single-minded focus on it, someone brings that deal to me that looks amazing and I go, that looks great. But I'm really focused on what I'm doing at the moment. So I either know someone that might be interested or, sorry, that's just not for me at this time. And when I did that, for me personally, that is when my business, the revenues really started to grow. And I've talked about this recently on the on the 35K a month podcast that we did a few weeks back. And that single-minded focus, I think, is one of the biggest things that can impact how quickly people are able to grow a business, but also a property business.
Yeah, yeah. My property business has sort of accidentally ended up quite focused. I have only ended up following a single strategy, and it's a very sort of specific sort of family house strategy. And yet I have struggled very much along the way with shiny pennies or shiny properties in this case. And I haven't gone all the way down to sort of misdirect my business, but I have wasted a lot of time looking at sort of land that would be interesting to develop on, or blocks of flats. And some of these we've actually talked about in the last 4 or so years on this podcast, about interesting properties that I found that I've spent hours investigating and reading through legal packs on auction sites, and all sorts of misdirected, wasted time that really I should have thought much earlier on in the process. Nope, I'm not. This is not the direction I'm going to take my property business. And hence, I don't need to spend the time on it. And this is something I am getting better at. And these days, an interesting property will come along, and I will spend a few minutes looking at it, because I like looking at property, and I can accept that that's something I can do, and I'm willing to spend some time on just because it's interesting. But I won't spend that extra time sort of really investigating and considering it from a business investment point of view, because I know that I'm not going to change the focus of my own property business, at least not at the moment. I mean, never say never in the future, but right now I know that's not my focus, and I know that's not where I should be putting my time, and hence I need to stay focused.
And I think
definitely
it's
something I need to work on.
Because there's the big element is if you want to grow something, I think you have to get laser focused on it. But there's also the other element, which is you get the knowledge and experience of working in that area. Now, just to be really clear, I'm not saying that people can't hop, skip and jump from doing a buy-to-let vanilla flat to doing a commercial development. Absolutely. I think, you know, if that's in your plan, final point, but if, you know, and if that's your objective is actually, I just want to get some tradespeople together and just see how they work or do whatever. And that's my plan. But I also think there's, you know, you just talked there about, you know, land and I think they're completely different, you know, they're in property in inverted commas, but they're very different disciplines. And I think, you know, because that takes a lot of different learning, because, okay, if I'm going to buy land and I have to understand about boundaries and I have to understand about permissions. And, you know, when I looked at, you know, when I had that first item, I had that property and I'm learning about tree preservation orders, TPOs, and, you know, this, and I'm going into planning departments. That's very different to what I do now, which is either, you know, buy or rent an HMO property. But, you know, when someone says to me, oh, do you know anything, you know, can you tell me something about Article 4? And I'll go, yeah. But if I was just focused on planning and doing land, someone said, you know, someone that does that says, oh, I'm doing this thing and it's in Article 4 area, but I don't know about that. And I'm like, yeah, because they're different disciplines. And again, I'm not saying that we couldn't become specialists in all those things. Of course, I think you can. But I think until you get specialist in one, it's very hard to get the momentum and the speed. Now, again, I'd say if you wanted to really grow, you employ that specialist. You know, you can employ a specialist. So you get specialists on. I get people that I think are arboriculturalists, and they'll come in and do what they need to do or whatever it is. But most of us, you know, when we're early stages, can't do that. So I think that is the other element, is that I become a specialist in what I'm doing, and then I'm very confident in it, and then I can model that and run it. And then if I wanted to move on to land or commercial to residential, if that, you know, if that floated my boat, then I would do that, you know. But yeah, just following the model. So I think there's many aspects from just staying focused on the objectives.
Yep, totally agree. And you touched on the final, fifth and final point that you're going to mention today. So what is that?
Well, quite simply, it was making and sticking to a plan. And I remember when I finally did get focused and I said, right, this is my objective. I this is how I want to get there. And to get to my objective, I'm gonna get 100. Basically, it's gonna be an HMO strategy, and my target's gonna be 100 rooms, because I've modelled out that that would roughly get to where I net out to where I wanted to be on a monthly income basis. And it was also using the all of the trades that I knew, had built relationships with in the area that I knew that was very much an HMO strategy area. So everything worked to follow that approach. I then had a phrase that I heard and it just stuck in my head, which was plan the work and work the plan. And then that just kept going over and over in my head, because, and that helped me really stay on track. Because again, it's very easy when you're sort of viewing properties, because you know, say you go, oh, you like this one. Oh, you might like this other one we've got around the corner, but it's slightly different. And it's got a shop under it. And this one's got a laundrette and it's got this commercial thing up there. And you're going, yeah, that's really interesting, but that's not in my plan. So it's just saved us all a lot of time. So fifth and final one is really, you know, make a plan to how you want to get there. So, you know, think about the right time frame to get where you want to be. Think about how realistic it is based on what you currently know and who you currently know. Because, you know, the phrase I've heard, which I think is true, is that many of us overestimate what we can do in a year, but underestimate what we can do in 10. So, I mean, I tend to work on sort of 5-year plans, you know, at the max. But, you know, 5 and 10 is good for long-term vision. But then I work on like a 3-year plan and just think about what is possible there. Work out the plan. What are the key things? And get the issues out on the table. And that was the one thing I was great at, was just putting those under the carpet. You know, I had utility bill claims coming left, right and centre, and I just sweep those under the carpet. But actually get those front and centre in the plan. So build out what are the most important things you need to do, and order them and just prioritize. That's your plan. Work the plan. And that is as simple as it could be for me, is just plan the work and work the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. My property business is very simple. So I'm not sure I have very much of a plan made or one to work. But in other walks of life, I really like making plans. I love making a good plan. I'll go into quite a lot of detail and make a really thorough plan. And then once I've made the plan, it's not so interesting anymore. And then I don't sort of think about it so much. And often it's quite difficult to, or at least personally, I find this, to force myself back to the plan that I've already made and to stick with it. I think it's the sticking with it that is often tricky, at least for me personally, because it's more interesting to make the plan than it is to follow a plan you've already made. I mean, it's done, isn't it? It's just finished. but no, you do actually have to stick to the plan and execute on it and make the things happen that are in that plan. And this is something that personally speaking, I am always working on and always trying to improve. So I think that's the end of the list, Stuart. Are there any final points you would like to add or to raise or mention generally?
No, I think, you know, I had a conversation with someone in the property sphere quite recently. He'll know who he is. Actually met him near my investment property in Croydon. And the final point, so all of this is irrelevant, as you say, if no action is taken. And, you know, that is why I like the phrase plan the work, work the plan, because the second half of that tells you what you need to do. And my final point, my final gift to the Business of Property podcast listeners and viewers is, you know, JFDI. And, you know, if you don't know what that means, just think about the Nike logo with an added word. But, you know, don't let anyone or anything put you off what you want to do. And planning is good, and thinking is good, and strategizing is very, you know, building strategies is good. But if it's all words on paper, you won't reach your goals. So just do it.
Indeed. Thank you, Stuart. And for me personally, and on behalf of everyone who you know listens to this podcast, I would just like to thank you for the 4+ years during which you have shared your knowledge and your experience and your overall wisdom with all of us. I've certainly learned an awful lot from you over these last few years. And it's been a really enjoyable journey. And I wish you every luck with your new non-business of property podcast ventures, and really, really do look forward to catching up with you again on the microphone for future episodes.
Thank you very much, Simon. And obviously, the feeling is very mutual, and I've certainly learnt from you as the years have gone by in terms of detail around property and property investing. So thank you, and thanks for making the podcast happen, because it's been driven by you. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. And I think that just leaves me to say to everyone listening, you can still reach the Business of Property. Contact details are in the show notes, and you can email show@thebusinessofproperty.com. And if you would like to reach out to Stuart, feel free to do that via that method, and I'll make sure messages get to him. You can also find his contact details in the show notes for LinkedIn and other contact avenues. And I, in some new way, shape, or form, will look forward to speaking to you again next week.